This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and we're doing something very special today. We have travelled over to Clydebank to see a lovely, lovely photography exhibition. And joining us now is a visually impaired photographer, Robert King, the person behind the exhibition. Robert, is so nice to be here. It's so nice to see you in person. We have spoken before, but it's always nicer in person, isn't it?
Yeah, it was nice to talk, but you know, the pandemic's got a lot to answer for. But yeah, it's good to meet face to face and have you out here. That's part of the reason of the exhibition as well, is to make connections with people rather than just online or over the phone, is to have people come down and try and experience something rather than just looking at a website and seeing the work, to come down and engage with it.
Robert, you are visually impaired. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about your condition?
I was born with congenital glaucoma, completely blind in one eye, just light perception, and the other eye's had various conditions over the years. It's now getting worse, and I've got about 20% vision left in that eye. It no means of focusing on anything unless it's on an iPad or a large screen thing. So it's just deteriorating. There's no clarity in what I can see anymore. Talking to you now, everyone's soft focus, everyone's Hollywood portraits. You know, everyone's nice and blood round the edges. So difficult to describe because I've had this for so long now. But essentially, yeah, just say someone blind in one eye and really low vision in the other one. And it's just getting worse now. People see you with dark glasses and a cane and say, oh, you're blind. People don't see this spectrum of sight loss.
So imagine when you tell people you do photography, they get quite surprised.
Yeah, they do. It's always, sometimes there's an interest, oh, wow, how do you manage that? And others, it's very patronising, like, well, good for you. You get a pat on the shoulder and stuff. But there's a lot of interest in what I'm doing, especially from other people who are visually impaired. Since the news of the exhibition went online, I've had a number of emails from people saying they found it inspiring that somebody was doing something different and they were going to have a go themselves. There was a nice comment left in the guest book in the exhibition from someone who said they were really going to sit down and take stock of their own mental health as well, because of what's said. There's a small booklet about the exhibition and it explains that it's not just about sight loss, it's about mental health and coping with the anxiety and the stress and the uncertainty of the future.
So is that the core of what, I guess, inspired this collection, showcasing your experience of living with sight loss, but also going beyond that, talking about mental health and a multitude of aspects of sight loss and beyond?
Yeah, it was. I had initially thought about doing a series of self-portraits. I've got a lot of interest in how self-portraits are done, and there's always standard cliches and manuals about focus on the eyes are the windows to the soul. Have someone stare into the camera. But it's like, what if you don't want to stare into the camera? What if your eyes don't work as people think they should work? And through that, I came across a large number of exhibitions which were portraits of visually impaired people. And for me, they seemed almost like a cabinet of curiosities. I think the humanity was lost. The images were more about what was wrong with the eyes rather than the person who had a disability. There was no real mention of what they did out with having a visual impairment. So when I was approached about doing an exhibition, that was it. It just clicked for me. I thought, I'll do some self-portraits about how I see myself and how I think other people might see me. So in the exhibition, there's some images that focus on the grief and anxiety and the uncertainty and the pain of sight loss. And at the same time, there's a few images that focus on the cliches about, you know, infantilizing people. You get treated like a child because, you know, you can't see, so you must have something wrong with you mentally as well. Through all that, it brought a lot of emotions to the surface for me about how I was dealing with my ongoing sight loss, how I thought I was dealing with it. And the process of actually doing the exhibition was quite cathartic, and it just made me confront quite a lot of mental health issues, and it's gone on from strength to strength. Now people are asking, so how do you cope? So it's gone from people seeing a photograph to now candidly asking, So what are you doing? Who do you speak to? And it's just for that alone, even just for a handful of people, I think the exhibition has succeeded already.
I feel like this often comes up with people that are creative, like yourself. There's a sort of catharsis that happens when you create projects like this that really look deep into your own personal experience. Was there a moment where you felt like, oh, wow, this is doing so much good for me, where you like had this realization?
I think during the pandemic, we're putting work online, speaking to people like yourself, things suddenly started to take off. I had more work in other exhibitions, there were some online shows. I was nominated for an award. I've had fairly extensive magazine features, and it all just seemed to click. And the thing about being asked questions by other creative people was they wanted to know the process rather than the kind of patronising, well done you, isn't it great that you can do these things? So there's a dialogue going on with other creatives who didn't have sight loss, who were really intrigued as to why you wanted to continue doing stuff when it was difficult. And it was like, well, that's the reason to carry on with it. Things are difficult, full stop. So you either give up, stay home and listen to an audiobook and get depressed, or you take your depression and your frustration and you try and turn it into something creative. It's like a wellness exercise, really. Before the pandemic, I was approached to do some mindful photography workshops, and that triggered it as well, because the amount of people who regard themselves as amateur photographers, everyone's an amateur, everybody really, everyone's still learning processes. But when I saw how much people were getting from photography to help their mental health, I just thought, I've tapped into something here with myself, and to push that forward is... Yeah, people seem to have picked up on it quite a bit. Without doing anything creative, I think I would just be sitting in the dark.
Have you always had this pull for photography? How long have you been doing it for? Or did it stem from a different passion?
My background is in the music business. So in the early 80s into the 90s, I ran a record label, and that was pretty successful. And then it came to an end when my sight went. So I woke up one morning, my sight had gone completely. I knew these things were going to happen, but it was sudden. So I had to rethink and retrain myself to what I was going to do. So I got involved in digital design with computing. I got myself signed up to a computing course at college, and I managed to get myself adaptive equipment. So I started teaching myself design work. And a few years after that, I was approached by a friend who worked for a photography gallery about, well, we need a designer. Would you be interested? And the interest grew from there. So I was meeting photographers and artists every day of the week, and working in and around photography, it's hard not to get involved yourself.
It's such a beautiful medium. And I feel like sometimes you hear from people when it comes to photography, if someone is blind or partially sighted, well, why do you bother looking at photography? Or why would you need descriptions of how things look? And I feel like these days we're seeing a lot more campaigns where they include alt text to images, and they go beyond just an image of a man walking through the street. They'll go really in depth to get that emotion. Like, what would you say to someone who's like, well, why do you need that?
My reply to him is, why not? I mean, you've got it. If you've got the vision, then you can see it all there. And if someone can't see it, then it's your duty to explain to them what you're doing. It's the same with this exhibition. There's a large print booklet which goes into detail with each image and explains what it's about, how I went about creating it. And that was the purpose of doing this audio tour that's coming up. The Arts Development Officer from Western Berkshire Council said, you know, this is such a fantastic show. We really need to have more people in. She's a trained audio describer for museums. So together we'll be doing a guided tour. And it's just open to all sorts of questions. So rather than people turning up and having an audio guide, they can then ask questions and get involved. So it's an interactive thing, if you like. It's not just coming to a gallery, seeing an image. You've got the artist and audio describer there to say what it's about. And I feel that to not do that would be kind of hypocritical. To be a visually impaired artist, to not make the work accessible, just goes against everything that I've been doing. So much so that I plan to add audio description to everything on my website. So all the images will have an audio link for me speaking about the image, which I've not come across. You just don't come across this kind of accessibility. It's the 21st century. Why is it not part and parcel? It shouldn't be an afterthought. It should be part of the process from the outset. and it was with this exhibition.
Robert, we're going to get a bit of a exclusive peek at your exhibition or exclusive guide from you, so we'll do that now. All right, well, we're back with Robert again. We didn't have to walk very far, Robert. We just wandered maybe 10, 15, 20 steps. You can hear how the acoustic changed. We're now in the exhibition space. So, Robert, would you mind explaining or describing what the space looks like?
The space is just a long, thin, wide corridor. Very white, very bright. Glass doors at either end. It's about 12 foot wide and about 30, 40 feet long. It's like an art tunnel.
I love that, an art tunnel. And we have some of your photos in front of us. They're hung quite beautifully. And I think, are we looking at maybe about 20 pieces, 15 pieces? Where
15.
Are we? Okay, I wasn't too far off. You were telling me you had to basically go away from using some photos, but so I imagine these are your best ones, the ones you're most proud
yeah.
of.
Yeah, these are the highlights. The initial selection for the exhibition was about 25 images, but rather than having the space crammed with photos, I thought it would be best to use the white space and the light here and just have a kind of smaller selection so that you've got more space to focus on each individual image and stand back and take that on board as opposed to being bombarded with imagery.
Well, let's choose a direction. Let's choose a side, left or right?
Right. So the very first image is a partial portrait of my face. This was used on a feature that you yourself did for the podcast a couple of years ago. And it's just a quarter section close-up of one of my eyes. And overlaid on top of that is copies of my retinal scans from the hospital and also a photograph of the monitor that they used while they were taking the scans. And if you have enough vision to go in closer to the image, you'll see the TV monitor lines coming down, which adds a nice texture to it. It's all done very bright orange and blood red colours. I've had it described as gruesome, but to me, it sums up a lot of how I see.
I think it's striking. I would say that's the word. I wouldn't say gruesome. It's the colours. They just really capture your attention when you first look at it.
Thanks. I won't describe everything to everyone because I'd like you to come to the show.
Yeah, you don't want it spoiled.
The next image is a black and white one, which is hands holding two pieces of broken mirror. And in the bottom section of the mirror is a photo booth picture of myself when I was 2 years old. And the top one is a photograph of myself from the start of this year. They're just close-ups of the eyes. When I started doing some research into the exhibition, I started doing research into my medical history, requested my records and found out an awful lot more about what was done to me when I was a child, hospital visits. And it was only then that I started to pay attention. And if you're able to get a close look at the eyes, you'll see cataracts developing in the eyes. So my vision was blurred even then. And it's still mirrored with the top. The eyes are still blurred even now. So it was interesting to find out things I'd completely forgotten about.
I love how it has this little effect of almost like it's been scratched or very aged.
Yes, that was done deliberately. Once the print was done, I had a digital way of scratching it on screen, took a photograph of the screen, and then processed that again. So it's meant to look like an old photograph that's been damaged, and the damage around it is very similar to the damage that I've got on the surface of my eyes. That, you know, these anomalies and lines are something I deal with every day. So it's a way of representing that.
It's really striking, actually. I would say it's probably the first one I noticed when I came in. This one's called Then and Now, and the previous one was called Shadow of an Echo, which is also the name of your exhibition, which I don't think we have mentioned that. But let's not go into too many details because you obviously 16 photos, so if you want to experience the rest of them, you will have to come and see, experience them for yourself, get guided through them by the man himself, the creator, the artist. So if you had to choose your absolutely favorite one out of these 16, what would it be?
This one. Toward Between the Light and Dark, which is a line from a song by David Bowie from Quicksand, from Humpty Dory album, and it's all about how in life people don't want to deal with the darkness, but there is darkness and light in every part of life. So for me, this image is a close-up of myself. It's actually a reflection from a mirror, and then I have a picture of a light bulb with moths around it, and that's superimposed on top of it. So for me, the light is very difficult and painful, and I prefer semi-darkness when I'm working, but at the same time, I need that light in order to work. So I'm torn between having to have the space bright or have the space in shadow.
It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah, it is.
Well, I know I said the previous one was my favourite, but actually this one's really beautiful as well.
So thanks.
I think it would be really hard to choose. They are absolutely stunning, and it's such a gorgeous place, so open. So we will head back to our little nook, and we will give those details for the audio-described tour.
Okay.
Well, Robert, that was amazing. So we're back in our little nook here, hiding away, having a bit of a final chat. Just get some details that people would want to know. So you mentioned earlier that you have an audio-described tour coming up for the exhibition. You'll be there. You'll have a wonderful audio-describer with you, helping to really explain the meaning behind the photos and really add color to them. So when is it happening? Can you give us all the details?
Yeah, the tour happens on Friday the 11th of October at 1:30. Scheduled to last for about an hour, but, you know, if people want to stay behind and ask questions, you know, the space is open all day. The information for that is on Eventbrite. If people know how to use Eventbrite, log into the website and search for Western Berkshire Council in my name, or just go to my website, www.rahking.art, and there's a link on the front page as you go in. It takes you to Eventbrite. The tour's free. There are tickets as to guide numbers, but please, you know, it'd be good to have you along.
Absolutely. Do come here. It's again Clydebank Museum and Art Gallery. If you can travel up, it's a wonderful venue, and you will get an exclusive tour straight from Robert. So, Robert, thank you again for speaking to RNAB Connect Radio today.
It was lovely meeting you again. Thank you for your time.